That's good. That works. So.
Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order and ask the secretary to call the roll.
Yeah, I came up with it that time. It worked.
Curtis?
So I don't know why it wouldn't.
Gilbert?
Present.
Hightower?
Present.
Rogers?
Present.
Sharma?
Present.
Scholar? Simmons?
Present.
Hedrick? Lockett?
Present.
A quorum is established.
Okay, in the absence of Secretary Roger Tedrick, I'm going to appoint Trustee Sharma to serve as Secretary Pro Tem for the board meetings both today and tomorrow. And along with that, you get an extra pay, Dr. Sharma.
Thank you. Thank you.
We will double your pay.
Yeah.
Okay. First item on the agenda is the public comments and questions. Today's meeting, comments will last up to 15 minutes total, 3 minutes per speaker. Madam Secretary, are there any persons who wish to speak?
Yes. Our first speaker is Sandy Pinsano-Conway.
Should I go down here? Or
yeah. Come on.
Or here? Oh, table yeah. Here?
Dear members of the Board of Trustees and guests, thank you for allowing me a few minutes to speak with you today. My name is Dr. Sandy Pinsano-Conway, and I first am here on behalf of the graduate student officers of the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies Registered Student Organization on the Carbondale campus, and they've asked me to read a statement emphasizing that the RSO is not the equivalent to the Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies academic program. They speak only as the officers of this RSO, and their statement is as follows. The officers of the WIGS RSO oppose the recent appointment of the Associate Dean and Director of the Graduate School on the Carbondale campus. As graduate students, we are each personally and professionally invested in the long-term success of graduate education at SIUC. We know hiring decisions are often difficult to make and involve many institutional considerations. And we also know substantial experience in graduate education is crucial to leading our graduate school and have concerns about the selection process. As such, we respectfully ask the board to reconsider their confirmation of this appointment. Sincerely, Janine Armstrong, incoming president, Shelby Swafford, incoming vice president, Emily Vajala, outgoing president and GPSC representative, Chloe Goldbach, incoming secretary, Tori Neal, incoming conference chair, Ryan Friel, members, and myself as the faculty advisor. Second, I'm the interim chair of the Department of Communications Studies on the Carbondale campus. However, my personal statement comes to you today as an individual faculty member, not as chair, and a 3-degree holder from the SIU system. I received my bachelor's from Edwardsville in 1999 and my master's and PhD in 2001 and 2006 from Carbondale. After being a faculty member at an R1 university in Michigan for 6.5 years, I chose to return to Carbondale specifically because of the excellent graduate education I received that allowed me as a first-generation student to have a career as an academic. My graduate experiences at SIUC were transformational, and I fully believe that the opportunities I received because of my graduate education would not have been made possible without the great work of my departmental faculty and the support of the graduate school in the early 2000s. My work as a graduate faculty member, dissertation advisor, and graduate student member over the past 14 years since graduation is what brings me here today to express my professional concern over the potential permanent appointment of Dr. Stephen Shi as the Associate Dean and Director of the Graduate School at SIU Carbondale. It's my understanding that Dr. Shi's home program, Information Systems Technologies, does not have a graduate program, and neither does the School of Information Systems and Applied Technologies, for which Dr. Shi has been the director. This provides an obvious hole in his most recent experience that might qualify him for this graduate dean and director position, according to the position qualifications. And on his CV on the SIU website, which I acknowledge there might be multiple versions, and so I may have been looking at an earlier version, he has an average of one publication per academic year, and his record of graduate advising is difficult to determine. It seems he has advised 9 master's theses or projects. I couldn't tell if they were separate projects or actual theses. And all but one were in the capacity of co-advisor. Most recent was in 2012, and only 3 were at SIU. And to my knowledge, from what I could tell, he has not advised doctoral students on dissertation projects. I do not find a record of teaching graduate courses. While Dr. Shi has obvious leadership and administrative experience, which many people on our campus have, his lack of graduate advising and directing experience should be alarming. It feels obvious to me as a graduate faculty member that not having this experience should disqualify him from the position of associate dean and director of the graduate school. And this is why I very respectfully ask at tomorrow's meeting that the board rejects the appointment of Dr. Shi as the associate dean and director of the graduate school and instead reopens the search. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our last speaker is Marcus Odom.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Dr. Marcus Odom. I have been at SIUC for over 21 years, and I'm currently the co-chair of the Faculty Senate Budget Committee and also serve on the Chancellor's Planning and Budget Advisory Council. I appreciate this opportunity to come to speak to you this morning, and I provide some comments in response to Board Agenda Y, the allocation of the state appropriations for fiscal year 2020. I'm thankful that we did receive a 5% increase in state appropriations for fiscal year 20. However, I'm concerned with the allocation resolution that the Board of Trustees have put forward. I also want to state that the SIUC Faculty Senate met last week and they passed a resolution that is also voicing concern over the allocation as it is you should have in your packet. I also provided a copy of my comments in your on your table this morning so that you, if you don't get a chance to hear everything that I've got to say, you can look at it later. The 5% increase was an across-the-board increase for the SIU system. However, the Board of Trustees resolution does not allocate the 5% across the board to each unit, but instead proposes to do so only for the School of Medicine and the system office, while proposing to split the remainder for SIUC and SIUB. This split is a major concern for several reasons. First, the state allocation was a 5% increase based on the budgets of all units in the SIU system. Currently, there is no factual or objective basis for not allocating that 5% across the board to each unit. There have been a lot of opinions expressed over the past 2 years, but nothing objective that supports the proposed 50-50 split. Second, the Board of Trustees has contracted with AGB Instructional Strategies to conduct a study to determine if there is a new allocation method that needs to be put forth at SIU. Being as that study is yet to be completed, making any changes now is untimely. I highly encourage the Board of Trustees to wait for the consultant's report before changing any allocations if they are changed at all. Third, the proposed 50-50 split will result in SIUC receiving an allocation which is less than 4% and SIUE receiving an allocation that's almost 7%. In actual dollars, SIUC will receive over $1 million less than what was expected. That $1 million is a large loss of funds that could be very helpful to us at this point in time in our history as we are trying to increase our enrollments and our retention numbers. That $1 million actually represents a decrease of almost 22% of the amount that SIUC would receive if the allocation were based on the 5% of our current budget. Instead of receiving approximately $4.65 million, we would only receive $3.64 million. SIUE, on the other hand, would receive 3.64 instead of 2.63, more than a 38% increase over what they would receive if it was based on the 5%. Fourth, since fiscal year 15, SIUC has cut continuing yearly expenses by almost $32 million. These cuts have occurred during a time when both the state appropriations and income tuition funds have decreased. SIUC has lost a large number of faculty and staff during this time. Unlike what has been publicized in a lot of the media, we have been cutting expenses tremendously, and we have reduced our expenses by over 15% since fiscal year 15. Lastly, SIUC is part of the SIU system, along with SIUE and the School of Medicine. Without any strong justification to support not distributing the 5% budget increase across the board based on the current budget allocations, it will signal that the SIU Board of Trustees is not treating all units equally. In fact, the current resolution will signal that SIUC is being penalized. To be fair, the 5% increase should be allocated equally among all units. In summary, the 5% state budget increase should be distributed to all units in the SIU system equally. To date, there are no objective reasons for modification to the current budget allocations. The proposed 50-50 allocation will decrease the amount that would be distributed to SIUC to less than 4%, which is over $1 million loss. This will have harmful consequences at SIUC. SIUC has cut a tremendous amount of expenses over the past few years while income funds have decreased, and during this time, SIUC has continued to maintain our excellent reputation. I am truly concerned that the current resolution represents a policy change which is being made without the board receiving any or reviewing any recommendations from the study that is out there. I ask the Board of Trustees, please, please do not make any modifications to the allocation at this time. A 50-50 split is just not equal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and hang around because we're going to be talking about the allocation study next. Any other speakers?
No.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is discussion of the status of the fund allocation study, and each of the board members, was it last night before, received a three-page summary from the AGB consulting firm that we hired to do an allocation study, and they've completed their work. I want to be very honest, I'm a little bit disappointed. They have set forth guidelines and things that we should consider, but in effect, they have punted it back to the Board of Trustees. I was on the board when hired these folks, and it was my thought that they were going to come back after talking to all of the trustees and the system heads and the heads of each of the campuses with some kind of a formula, you know, like when you bake a cake, you put in different things and you come out with a cake. That's not what we received. Early on, when this process started, it's my understanding, like the IBHE has done a cost analysis per discipline of what it costs to educate a student, and they break it down not only by discipline but by the cost of freshman sophomore versus junior senior, then the master's and PhD, and the various disciplines. You factor in dental and pharmacy and aviation, where you buy airplanes and simulators, which are expensive. All that goes into a And they come out, as I understand it, with a cost, average cost per student campus. I believe that information was given to these AGB consulting firm. In fact, I know it was. And obviously, they just kind of ignored it, or they didn't consider that. We have, you know, but one of the things in this report, Mr. Odom, and in response to some of your comments, it says, any formula rebalancing should first be done with new funds from the state rather than by significant transfer from one campus to another. And that's what is being done with this proposed split of the increase in funds. I don't think there's any... you know, we are a family. Carbondale and Edwardsville are the same. And just like years ago when Edwardsville was getting started, Carbondale kind of helped them. You know, that we sold bonds to build their residence halls, and we helped them. But, you know, the demographics have changed. Things have changed. We have a footprint at Carbondale of for about over 20,000 students with, you know, 11,000 students, and there's going to have to be some changes to Carbondale, and Edwardsville may not be growing as fast, but it's kind of been steady, and I can understand where they're coming from and wanting a bigger share of funds so they can grow their particular campus. There are obviously a lot of differences, but we have a three-year plan with new money, and like I said, I'm disappointed in this report that we paid for, but at least they've given us some things to work with. Enrollment is going to be a factor, but there's a lot of other factors, considering there are similarities but a lot of differences in the missions of these two campuses. But with that in mind, and I just throw it up for discussion, and is that we are in the process of selecting a new president. I would like, once the new president gets on board, to appoint an ad hoc committee that will have two board members. Dr. Hightower, the vice chair, and Roger Tedrick will be chair of the finance committee, along with Dr. Stuckey, Bill Winter, Judy Marshall, maybe the chiefs of staffs of the chancellors, to work with the new president in refining what the AGB consulting group has given us, to come up with a system of dividing monies between the two campuses that will not hurt either campus, but make these campuses understand that they can know what they're going to have, that they can plan for growing with their programs they have. But this is complicated, and it's not easy. I don't know SIU system is different than other universities in this state, except for the University of Illinois, which has a system. They don't have the financial problems that we have. We're going to have to do it in a phased-in approach. But obviously, from what AGB, they've done their work, they've kind of funded it back to us. So we're going to have to come up with our plan. We are going to come up with a plan. Never a good time to shift money or to allocate this 50-50. Kind of reminds me when I was dating my wife, my parents asked me, when are you going to get married? And I said, well, I can afford it. And they said, well, then you'll never get married. There's never going to be a good time to do this. But this is a start. This is a start. And it's going to be a process, and with our new president, and with this committee that will be formed, to try to come up with a plan. And then, as Dr. Stuckey has told me this morning, he says, you know, once you come up with a plan, who's going to run it? That you know, it's going to require data to be are we going to make adjustments every year, or is it going to be every 2 or 3 years? There's a lot of questions that need to be answered that wasn't answered. I'm committed to speaking for myself of going forward with trying to develop some kind of a fair, balanced allocation model that will be able to provide the needs for each of these campuses. Dr. Hightower, you want to say anything?
I do, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to commend you for the leadership that you have provided during this difficult time. Coming back on the trustee board, there was a rift between the two campuses on several fronts, one of them having to do with funding allocation. And I think, you know, early on, we said that we were going to be transparent, we were going to be fair, we were going to do what's right for both campuses. And while I am disappointed with the report, you know, I'd heard so much about this report that's going to come back. It was going to have all of the answers, and all we would have to do is take their recommendations and implement them. It did not happen. The bottom line here, with the proposed allocation that I'm hoping and I'm saying that we should implement, I being one person, think it's fair. It allows the new president to come on board, take a hard look at the system, take a hard look at the footprint for the Carbondale campus, take a hard look at continual enrollment, which we are spending an enormous amount of time, you and I, Mr. Chairman, representing a board with the Carbondale campus, and we'll be doing the same thing with the Edwardsville campus. I think that this is a fair and equitable way to do this. 50-50 with new money for the next 3 years. Whole harmless for the Carbondale campus, where they don't lose any money, and given the new president an opportunity to take a hard look at the overarching responsibility for educating each student on both campuses. So that is my support for your recommendation, Mr. Chair, and I think you've done it in a balanced, fair, transparent way with both campuses. Those are my comments.
Any other trustee? Trustee Lockett.
I'll just make one recommendation. In addition to that committee with the additional two board members, can we have both students?
Both students.
Because, I mean, I know being at Edwardsville's campus, it's a big topic, and being on the Carbondale campus, it's a big topic. So if we could have...
It'd be helpful if the students were mathematic majors.
Hey, Chair, Mr. Chair.
Plus one.
Good. I had a comment along those lines, talked to you offline about it, but might I recommend that the entire board is ex officio of that committee,
yes. Okay.
And
yes.
Then we know when it's going on. We can show up if we want to. And
perfect.
Well, that's fine. The only my thought was is that this committee would then make a report to the finance committee, who would then make a report to the board. But if we have if more than two trustees get together at one time, Luke, that's an open meeting, and that may. No disrespect to Jennifer Gabe, they would show up and they'd report out, you know, it may be have a chill effect. But as that small committee develops something, I think then we need to maybe bring the whole board together in that fashion that Trustee Simmons was talking about.
So one comment. You've obviously given a lot of thought to this.
I've lost a lot of sleep over this the last couple of nights.
That too. let me say the obvious. I mean, there are two primary players in this. That runs the risk of having, quote, a winner and a loser in the eye of the beholder here. Start this process now. I'm on my way out, as you all know, eventually, as soon as we get the new person in here. Wouldn't it be better to have this be on the back of the guy who's no longer here, as opposed to the new person coming in? This is his first action out of the chute, and there's going to be a winner, and a perceived winner and a loser?
I don't have any problem with that. We can start
and
the process now.
We could get it started. Why wait? That way we've got the chance.
Let's do that.
I agree with that, Mr. President. I agree with what you're saying totally. I modify my comments. Everything I said stays in place with
start
the exception
now.
Of starting now,
starting now.
With,
okay.
with Acting President Darcy.
Trustee Shaw. I agree with our chairman, Judge Gilbert. I think I read the report.
and I was looking forward to a mathematical formula or model there so that we can punch in the numbers and get out the result, but it didn't happen. And I fully agree with the plan, and I agree with President Dorsey, what he said. Let's get started.
Start now.
And I look forward to see a real model there where every time they punch in the numbers, masters, undergraduate, PhD students, and get the results out.
We can maybe have a progress report in September, and then maybe some kind of a final report in December.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the, when I read in the last paragraph of their report, with regard to the funding for system strategic priorities, oh, no, this is the, let me, the last page.
Last paragraph.
Let me get the
they
last
gave
page.
An example.
It says, not addressed in these recommendations is a formula for reallocating basic funding on an ongoing basis. Hell, that's what we hired them for. That's what we hired them for. They just said we're not doing it. They just punted it back to us. So we're going to take the bull by the horns, and we're going to move forward with it.
Done in this calendar year.
Yes.
I'd like to modify my comment.
Okay.
To make it easier, I think it'd be wiser, myself and McKenzie, to plan something on each of the campuses, whether or not we go to each campus, and instead of adding the students, we could have an event like the campus conversations to get the student, add them onto this committee.
Chancellors or provosts have any?
Well, I think speed is critical. Leon, if I understood your last comment, you're saying you kind of go to campuses and have the students have a conversation. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And my worry is that's important, but let's not delay. And I'm worried that we're going to be eating time.
I agree with John Dunn as well. I think it's important that the students have constant feedback as to what is happening, but go on, and we got to get their input before. Bottom line, we need to move on this, and at the end of the day, we are the ones that are in charge of fiduciary responsibility. And this falls under our purview, and we need to get this done. Now, I am not opposed to the student trustees going back and giving feedback. I think they should. But this is a timing issue. We need to move on and get this done. And we will do what's right for the system, which will include both campuses.
Can I say something as well?
Yes.
I was just going to say, I think that if we had like a deadline or some type of structured date, Breon and I could very well do that. And I think that it is important to get some student feedback and let them know, since they're ones that will be affected with this too.
Try to get those deadlines to you. All right. Any other discussion on this topic?
Was there anything that was provided by consultant Golding that could serve as a basis of the committee, or is basically committee starting at square one?
No, they provided some basis that we can be starting, and one of the one of the things they said was state funding should continue, and we'll get you copies of the chancellor. We'll get you copies of this. Just came to me late. When did I you know, the thing is, I talked to Kevin like at 5 o'clock Monday evening, and I said, I haven't gotten anything. As soon as I get it, and I think I got it at 8 o'clock that night. So this is just hot off the press, and we had a chance to get it to the board members, but I will get it to you folks and take a look at it. And they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bullet points. Yes, Trustee Curtis.
Chairman, I'll take a little different view on the consulting report. I'm not sure. I like some of the themes that they created there for us, just like tying into the board resolution for new money. I'm not sure I want a consultant to come up with a hard formula. I think that's really our job to try to do that. And I'm not sure anything works exactly to a formula. I mean, that's something to consider, but I'm okay with the report.
In the process of doing this, there's the other side of the equation. That is, what are the charges assessed or assigned to each campus? And those are not 50-50. They're assessed certain charges based on formula that models, to a large extent, the percentage that has been the district. So somewhere in there, I think we're talking smaller amounts of money, but we're still talking money. We're paying two-thirds.
Well, it, as an example, I was not aware, I've been on this board for several years, I was not aware, I thought that, you know, Dr. Stuckey works for the system. Luke works for the system. But yet, they get paid, I guess some of the campuses have to pay their salary.
We cover their costs.
And I was not aware, I thought that their salaries came out of the 2% that the system gets. So there's a, it's complex. And there's a lot of funding for system-wide services that come out of campus, which, to be honest with you, until a few months ago, I wasn't aware of. And so it's going to take a study. It's going to take some hard work. But I'm aware that, you know, that there are system OEs, as an example, that actually get paid partially by each of the campuses.
Thank you.
Anything else on this? And, you know, Trustee Curtis, I agree. I don't know whether I expected the report to come back and say Carbondale gets 55%, Edgerville gets 45%. But what I was expecting is that how they would come back with some kind of a, like the IBHE has a cost per in order to determine an average, what it costs to educate doctoral students, master students, undergraduate students, pharmacy, dental. And I've been to the dental program they have in Edwardsville. They have all these machines and stuff. And aviation, I'm sure you guys were on the board when you had to buy airplanes. But I expected AGB to come up with some kind of what it costs based upon the information that these campuses gave them, what it cost per student, and then we could do it that way, but they didn't.
I think when you're talking about aviation costs and airplane, you know, there's variable expenses coming into the equation to train students. The challenge the university has, we got a lot of fixed cost in big campuses, and as enrollment changes dramatically, if fixed cost isn't reduced, it's going to have a dire impact on this overall calculation.
And that's exactly the challenge that we're going to have. We've got to reduce the fixed cost. Enrollment goes down, and if it goes up, which we hope it will.
One of the challenges of the world that we live in, SIU Edwardsville and Carbondale, when you look at enrollment trends, it was not that many years ago that science was going like this, majors, and then it dropped. The bottom fell out. So a number of universities made the decision, therefore, that they were going to eliminate a large number of faculty. No sooner did that happen, and it went. So some of those fixed costs and how you adjust that, but if you don't, just got to be smart about it.
You're like a hospital. You have very high operating leverage. I mean, you got a lot of fixed costs, and so therefore, it's very challenging when your variable costs.
We're going to do the best we can for both campuses. All right, good discussion. Next item is the we need to close the meeting. We're going to take a recess and then reconvene in the Pearson Museum for executive session. We'll take a 10-minute break. And where is the
top of the stairs?
Okay. In recess. How do we systematize the approach you're talking
about? Okay, so everything that I've been able to accomplish so far has been through persuasion and gentle coercion. But I have no authority. You know, I'm just someone who calls these people together. And to me, true systemization puts someone in charge who does have some authority and develops a structure that can be looked at and that can be adhered to across the system. Those are the kinds of things that I mean. We are a group, and we meet on a regular basis, but it does tend to be catch-as-catch-can, and that's not the way I like to do business.
That was my question as well, Wes. So, you know, again, just cut right through the weeds. What do you need on the board to fuel this true collaboration and push the diversity initiatives? What do you cut through? Same question I used to ask you guys with heading up the medical program. What do you need from us?
So I don't want to ignore those things that I listed in my final bullet point. I definitely need those things. But I need to know where the board stands in terms of this systemization idea, whether they agree with it, and if they agree with it, then we need to start enacting it. Because, so sitting behind me in the audience are probably some members of the DAC. Some members of the DAC. I'm totally troubled that all members of the DAC are not sitting behind me. And I believe that there needs to be some teeth put in this. If we're serious about what we're doing, that there are some people who should be required to be a part of the DAC and should be attending accordingly. My way of doing things, that's the way it happens, especially if you're being paid money by the system. So the board has to decide how they want this to look and whether they want to put some authority behind this position.
When this program began, you said it was initiated, I think, in 2016?
Yes.
And you were hired in 2016 or 17?
17.
Okay, and this was this initiated by the board?
Yes.
And what was the purpose of its initiation or its implementation?
The way it was explained to me is that I was hired to implement the diversity initiatives and to try to do this across all three campuses. And that's the way I have conducted myself.
We just had we had separate campuses had their own separate diversity, and we wanted to, because I was on the board, you know, we hired Dr. McNeese to coalesce everybody, so everybody takes, basically, we wanted you to give direction, make sure that we were all doing our jobs on each of these campuses.
Yes, most definitely. And when the DAC first came together, this is among the things that I said to them. Yes, we have been given 12 initiatives. There are 12. But I believe that we as diversity champions and experts should make recommendations to the board about what should take place. But just like the system in general, we have to come together as a committee, as a president's advisory committee, in order to make this happen. And we've had our ups and downs and rounds as well. That doesn't disappoint me too much because I believe it's doable, but I just think that it just needs to be structured a bit more.
First of all, it's a great conversation. I'm sitting as the chancellor, only having been here.
Yes.
But I want to make sure, and I suspect it's very true, of we need to be in the picture. But people can't. They're not either attending or doing what they need to do, then please feel free to use us, because our responsibility is to make sure and to help you. I'm very open to you giving me a call or an email and saying, can you help me that these individuals are either not attending, showing up or doing, or they're not here?
Sure.
Make that happen.
I got that. But let me say that I feel like I have been given support by the chancellors. I like to include the dean of the School of Medicine as well, because of that campus. And President Dorsey has made it his practice to attend the DAC meetings on a regular basis, you know, after the board has finished its dealings. And whenever I've been on a particular campus, because we meet on the same schedule as you, okay? So when I'm on a particular campus, most of the time, President Dorsey has encouraged the chancellor from that campus to accompany him when he visits the DAC. I'd love to see that continue. So you can see whether your folks are sitting around the table. And if they're not, then you need to be asking the question, why not? But if these folks are not required to sit around the table.
That's the point.
Okay, it sure is.
Absolutely. So I wouldn't mind seeing for this cancer, this and attendees or non-attendees.
But as I mentioned, I also think that there needs to be a possible reworking of the names.
Yeah, okay.
In my opinion, the chief diversity officers from each campus definitely should be on the DAC. Okay, that should be required, and they should be there. Beyond that, it's sort of up to us who that will be. I love student representation, so I wouldn't want to see that go away. But beyond that, what constituency groups and what individuals are going to make up the rest of the committee, that's sort of up to us. But I was hoping for a committee no more than, you know, 15 or 16 people. It gets a little bit unwieldy. But out of that number, I think we should have a majority every time we meet. That's just my opinion.
Is the 16 people total from all the campuses?
It is.
So when you meet at one, if you meet at Edwardsville, the people from Carbondale would have to travel up there.
That is true. Hence the support needed for that travel, that someone understands that they're a member of the DAC, they need to be at the meeting, and they may need to be reimbursed travel expenses.
How many members are on the DAC currently?
16.
There are 16.
16 on paper.
Okay. And how were those members selected?
Sort of randomly. Certainly the chief diversity officers were automatically there. The students were automatically there, except the School of Medicine chose its student from its Office of Diversity. And the others were chosen based on interest in diversity. Some of them wanted to be on the DAC.
I think you have a situation that we have seen just in the last meeting, and that is there is an emerging system strategic plan that is being developed simultaneously while conversations are happening on the campus levels about strategic plan.
Yes.
Sometimes those connect, sometimes they don't. I know that last year we spent a lot of time on our diversity and inclusion strategy. And you mentioned the 12 items in this system. What processes align those discussions so that everyone's on the same page?
No processes. They are not aligned. And those are the kinds of things that need to happen. Indeed, to my way of thinking, there should be a strategic plan that comes from the system level. And maybe things need to be aligned in accordance with that strategic plan as you go down to the three campuses. But right now, we still have our individual plans on each of the three campuses. and there's very little alignment. Sometimes we're doing the same thing. Sometimes we're not even using the same language. But if you're going to systematize it, I believe that that's what would develop. Some sort of hierarchy.
Part of the reason why I think we're having this discussion.
Yes.
And there's a bit of chicken versus egg here. You know, no strategic plan till we get a president, and on it, so then I can't do this or that. But if we can talk about what it is that we at SIU value, and then when the new person comes, we can incorporate those things into building a strategic plan. So I think it's fine to put these problems or issues out on the table so that we can address them. And frankly, Wes, go ahead and make suggestions, work out a plan. You and I can talk it over and move on from there.
Well, I'd love to do that, but let me show you what Wes faces. So I've got all these diversity champions who may or may not be at the meeting, and we'll sit down and say, let's work out a plan that we can give to Dr. Dorsey. But they have to be there with butts in the seat in order to make that happen so that we can use our brain power. Do you follow what I'm saying? So there are some basic kinds of things that have to transpire before even that can happen. I know these folks, they could hammer out a plan in a matter of weeks. You know, something that we could hand to you, but they have to be there, and they have to have the power to be.
Pardon me, this is maybe a question, a little bit of ignorance, but when we talk about diversity, are we talking about the big D?
I am.
So in that discussion, we're talking race, ethnicity, gender, disabilities, religion.
Yes.
The whole package.
Yes.
Okay. And with that, this has to be system driven. This cannot be campus driven. Now, as we talk about everything that we're trying to do right now, we're trying to say we're not going to take away the autonomy of each campus, but there are certain things that we value. And one of the key things we should be valuing as a system is diversity.
Yes, sir.
The big D, as you just said, Mr. Chancellor. So that in itself calls for you folks to come together and begin developing that plan. The second thing, if it's funding to get those people at a certain place, I don't know how the money... if it's driven from the president's office or if you guys have a budget, if you're saying to us that we need to increase the budget for this, then that's where we say the chair says to Kevin, you work with these folks and tell us what we need. And then this becomes a system board problem to manage, giving you what you need. But Wes, I have to say, we've known each other a long time. You know, mm-hmm. I like to cut right through it. You tell us, because this is important, and I don't want anybody to misread where I stand on this. Diversity is something that we should value, and not just in words, and not just on paper,
sure,
but something tangible that's measurable that we can see constant results of the work that these individuals are doing.
I like that. If I had to choose a number one, you say cut to the chase, it would be to determine the makeup of the DAC, who is on the committee, and then to see
Who determines who's on the committee? I mean,
I'm sorry. How do you determine? That's up to us.
Who
determined it initially?
Yeah. Who determines? Because I'm going to jump here. If transportation is the issue of getting butts in the seat, I'm sure we can find money to make sure that the butts get in the seats.
I don't think transportation is the only issue. It's just one of the issues. When people attend a DAC meeting, they would like to know that they're going to be reimbursed, and you know that parking tickets are going to be paid and all that kind of thing. That's not the only issue. That's just one of the issues. Where I'm headed is that once we decide who's to be on the DAC, then I want you folks to make certain that they're sitting there. I don't have the authority to make certain that they're sitting there, but if they're representing your campus, then they should be there.
And in the composition, given that it's a system initiative, then and given that we're talking about the Big D, we may find that Edwardsville has a few more people than Carbondale or the School of Medicine because of the composition. For instance, if it's really about the Big D, then we shouldn't each have a person that's population.
Mm-hmm.
We may only need one, and it may be the person from Edwardsville, and you know that's fine, and that's the voice and the so.
Because even now, I mean, I have my list of members.
Yeah,
it's not equal across all three campuses, but that once again, I'm being candid with you, is through happenstance. You may say something like, "I want four members from each campus to be on the DAC," and then comes the job of deciding who those four members are. Or you could choose it based on the area.
I want to go back to a point. I'm troubled by your comment and embarrassed. Somehow we have people on this committee that are not obviously showing up. The butt's not in the seat. And I'm telling you, I think that's our responsibility to help you make sure the butt's in the seat.
Yeah. I'm with you.
So, but I got to know that, okay? And if I don't know that, I can't make it happen.
Well, I think without me being a tattletale, which we don't like to do, you can just say, henceforth, I expect you to be there. And that's acceptable to me. We don't need to go back in history about who hasn't been and, you know, but once we make some decision about going forward in a particular way, henceforth, you should be.
And if you're not going to be there, then don't waste a seat. We need.
I like that.
Yeah, we need people who are going to be active. Right?
The truth of the matter is that diversity is best accomplished by individuals who want to do it.
Passionate, yeah.
Rather than by people you have forced to do it.
Well, it gets back to my question: who selects the people to be on the diversity committee?
Well, as I said, I believe that chief diversity officers should be there. So that's easy, okay? And students should be represented. So that's easy. It's after that who we decide should be there. And I'm open. I mean, I could tell you who's there, and you can send me emails, or we can talk at some other time about who should be represented from your campus on that committee.
Well, could we give Kevin, could we check the chances to do something? Guys, work with Wes to determine who should be on the committee and then tell us what you need from us, and then we get this thing moving.
Have to have something like that to start. And then we can work and say, in this category, who are we about? And you might have a name and say, absolutely, and I might say it. But we have to do that.
Yeah, and then I think we work with you with recommendations, but ultimately the composition has got to be one that you're comfortable with, that you think the Big D is represented. And mm-hmm. again, it doesn't have to be equal.
But when's your next meeting?
When you all meet next? Yes. You know, the way I look at it, though, so if you've got the chief diversity officers from each campus, they are sort of an umbrella that's representing a lot of facets of diversity on the campus. That's why they need to be there. But then if there are some others that you'd like to have sitting at the table, then so be it.
Are you meeting today or tomorrow?
Typically we would have, but because of the training today, I gave them tomorrow off, you know, because they were to be here.
So the next meeting is going to be in Carbondale in September?
Yes. Whatever the schedule is, I don't have to remember.
Edwardsville.
Okay.
Edwardsville in September.
Yes.
Well,
whoever's on this committee, let the chancellors know, and they will let their people know that they got to be there. You know, if it takes a directive from the president to each of these ones individually, that the board expects them to be there.
You
can't operate unless you got people there to operate with.
I agree.
Meet with the three campus heads and determine the type of individuals you're looking for and reappoint so we're ready to go by the next meeting.
Something I would also suggest. So you said that you guys have your scheduled meetings like for the next however long. Like, do you have one already set, like the dates?
Yeah, the members of the DAC know that when the Board of Trustees meets, they also meet on that Thursday.
Okay, so that would be something, too, that whenever you do have the people, even if, you know, they're a great representative, like maybe send them the dates ahead of time and say, like, can you absolutely be there on these dates? And then if they don't have any conflicts, then they are expected to be there. But even though, like, you might choose somebody, they may have a schedule to where they couldn't go to the meetings. So that could be another issue.
I hear you. I look at it a little bit differently. We're just talking here. All of these meetings that I have attended, you all have been here. I mean, it's important enough to you to be here.
I guess I
sort of see the DAC meeting should have that kind of importance. Now, granted, I mean, if someone has something that's going on, that's, I don't expect them to show up. But otherwise, I see it as sort of an extension of your role with the university system.
So you're meeting us go.
We are on it.
You are on it.
Right. So I'm just saying, like, for your other members, though, that you said that the heads will choose whoever it is that goes to them, right? So those members, like, yes, it may be important to them, but if they have something going on and they don't know when the dates are, they may agree to it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, except I'm saying this is pretty simple. We know when the dates are. They're published on the website. Board meets here. DAC meets on Thursday. Everybody gets that. Know the dates.
Dates, and it's just if you can't make it, send like a substitute or something like that. Can I ask you this question?
Certainly.
What else makes it difficult to have these seats not fill? Or people, what in your opinion, like, is it the not in my contract? Like, how am I, if I'm not unpaid over the summer, some of these members are like, you can't get me out of this meeting. that's the point blank.
Well, okay. What else? Of course, it would be the same thing that has plagued the system that we all know about, that for the longest we've been doing things with. Now, here comes an initiative that's calling us to do things together. To break that inertia and get people to begin to think like that and to come together like that doesn't come easy. So that has to be worked on as well. But I think these are people who get it. But if their bosses, the authorities, say to them, this is important to us, this is what we want you to do, I think they'll do it.
Okay, here's what we're going to do, because we're running out of time here.
Yes.
And actually, this is a suggestion that our general counsel came up and whispered in my ear.
But did he charge us for that?
He probably did. You get the list from these campuses. You get everything to Kevin. This will be a system committee where Kevin will appoint people. And is that basically what you have in mind? And we can work through Luke and make sure that, and it will come from the authority of the president. And the president will, Luke can work with the president to work out the wording, but you get the names of the people you want on this committee, and it's going to be coming from the president and with a directive that they need to be there. And if it comes out to reimbursement, we'll find the money to reimburse for travel. But we need to kickstart this thing where we're all working together.
I have no problem with that, and I will do it.
All right.
You have the most updated version of the tool.
I have access to it.
I would suggest that once we know who it is and we're pointing, everyone is going to be there. because to me, systemizing this means that you have to have that awareness.
Yes.
And be thinking about this plan doesn't speak to that at all, versa, so that we can decide how much consistency we can.
I would be excited about doing that.
This is going to be a system committee.
Yes.
Appointed by the system head. Expectations that the people are going to follow through.
I like it.
Now, we adjourn from here. We go upstairs, west. Is that what we do?
That's our spot.
Yes. Close the board. Do I need a motion to close?
No.
Okay, the next item is the diversity training.
Yeah. Hey, will we come back here, or are we finishing wherever we're going?
We're finishing up there, so if you want to take your things
all right.
For today.
I don't get this one.